Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, words to live by, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. 40 years ago this month, President Reagan responded to the crisis in the Middle East by announcing the deployment of American forces as part of a multinational peacekeeping force. Here's the statement.
Ambassador Habib has informed me that a plan to resolve the West Beirut crisis has been agreed upon by all the parties involved. As part of this plan, the government of Lebanon has requested, and I have approved, the deployment of United States forces to Beirut as part of a multinational force. The negotiations to develop this plan have been extremely complex and have been conducted in the most arduous circumstances. At times, it was difficult to imagine how agreement could be reached, and yet it has been reached. The statesmanship and the courage of President Sarkis and his colleagues in the Lebanese government deserve special recognition, as does the magnificent work of Ambassador Habib. Phil never lost hope, and in the end, his spirit and determination carried the day, and we all owe him a debt of gratitude.
In a moment, I'll give you a brief synopsis of the crisis so we can all begin on the same page. This will prompt a more interesting discussion for this podcast of the rules of engagement, which President Reagan asked to be reviewed after the bombing of the U.S. Marine barracks on October 23, 1983, which killed a significant part of our peacekeeping force, taking the lives of 241 American soldiers as they slept. The president said it was the saddest day of his presidency, perhaps the saddest day of his life.
I know there are no words that can express our sorrow and grief over the loss of those splendid young men and the injury to so many others. I know there are no words also that can ease the burden of grief for the families of those young men. Likewise, there are no words to properly express our outrage, and I think the outrage of all Americans, at the despicable act, following as it does on the one perpetrated several months ago in the spring that took the lives of scores of people at our embassy in that same city, in Beirut. But I think we should all recognize that these deeds make so evident the bestial nature of those who would assume power if they could have their way and drive us out of that area, that we must be more determined than ever that they cannot take over that vital and strategic area of the earth, or for that matter, any other part of the earth. Thank you.
After the assassination of Anwar Sadat in the fall of 1981, terrorist activities escalated in the Middle East. By June 1982, the government of Israel began an invasion of Lebanon in response to the attempted assassination of Israeli ambassador to the United Kingdom. The objective of Operation Peace for Galilee was to force the PLO out of rocket range. Yet, the fighting soon escalated into war with Palestinian and Lebanese militias, as well as the Syrian military. A great debate ensued because the cause of Lebanon had never been supported by the president's generals or by his Secretary of Defense. So, to reporters, the president clarified his objective. Let's listen.
Our purpose will be to assist the Lebanese armed forces in carrying out their responsibility for ensuring the departure of PLO leaders, officers, and combatants in Beirut from Lebanese territory under safe and orderly conditions. The presence of United States forces also will facilitate the restoration of the sovereignty and authority of the Lebanese government over the Beirut area. In no case will our troops stay longer than 30 days. The participation of France and Italy in this effort is further evidence of the sense of responsibility of these good friends of the United States. Successful resolution of the West Beirut crisis by responsible implementation of the plan now agreed will set the stage for the urgent international action required to restore Lebanon's full sovereignty, unity, and territorial integrity. Obtain the rapid withdrawal of all foreign forces from that country and help ensure the security of northern Israel. We must also move quickly in the context of Camp David to resolve the Palestinian issue in all its aspects, as well as the other unresolved problems in the Arab-Israeli conflict. Only when all these steps are accomplished can true and lasting peace and security be achieved in the Middle East.
Well, we know those forces were there for over 1 year, and we know the tragic outcome. After the bombing of the Marine barracks, an intense argument ensued regarding how to proceed in the future. Washington Post wrote that, for a power with America's responsibilities, it is inconceivable to hand the bombers the victory they sought by pulling the Marines out. Over the next 3.5 months, our soldiers in Lebanon withdrew, a process to which Secretary Shultz vehemently objected. We are in Lebanon, he said, because the outcome in Lebanon will affect our position in the whole Middle East. To ask why Lebanon is important is to ask why the whole Middle East is important, because the answer is the same. However, Secretary of Defense Cap Weinberger had a completely different perspective, believing that Lebanon was hopeless and that the Marines had no useful purpose there. During a conversation Weinberger had with General Colin Powell, he said he wished he had been more persuasive with the president. In 1983, President Reagan and his advisors discussed whether to put the surviving Marines on ships or give them a more defensible perimeter by expanding the territory they held. And if they chose the former and moved the Marines to the Mediterranean, it meant that dreaded word, withdrawal. So from the Oval Office, the president posed some serious questions to the American people.
Let me ask those who say we should get out of Lebanon. If we were to leave Lebanon now, what message would that send to those who foment instability and terrorism? If America were to walk away from Lebanon, what chance would there be for a negotiated settlement producing a unified democratic Lebanon? If we turned our backs on Lebanon now, what would be the future of Israel? At stake is the fate of only the second Arab country to negotiate a major agreement with Israel.
While the president initially wanted action after the terrorist bombings in Beirut, Secretary of State Shultz changed his position and ultimately remarked, "If I ever say send in the Marines again, somebody shoot me." Reluctantly, the president agreed with his team's recommendation that the Marines be redeployed to Navy ships offshore. In Reagan's heart, he equated this redeployment with withdrawal, but ordered a review of the rules of engagement. After this brief message, we'll cover what was resolved in the new rules of engagement. I'll be right back.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles, individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the story. After the Marine barracks bombing in Beirut, the president presented the complicated situation to the American people.
Now many of you are asking, why should our young men be dying in Lebanon? Why is Lebanon important to us? Well, it's true, Lebanon is a small country more than 5,500 miles from our shores, on the edge of what we call the Middle East. But every president who has occupied this office in recent years has recognized that peace in the Middle East is of vital concern to our nation, and indeed to our allies in Western Europe and Japan. We've been concerned because the Middle East is a powder keg. 4 times in the last 30 years, the Arabs and Israelis have gone to war, and each time the world has teetered near the edge of catastrophe. The area is key to the economic and political life of the West. Its strategic importance, its energy resources, the Suez Canal, and the well-being of the nearly 200 million people living there, all are vital to us and to world peace. If that key should fall into the hands of a power or powers hostile to the free world, there would be a direct threat to the United States and to our allies. We have another reason to be involved. Since 1948, our nation has recognized and accepted a moral obligation to assure the continued existence of Israel as a nation. Israel shares our democratic values and is a formidable force an invader of the Middle East would have to reckon with. For several years, Lebanon has been torn by internal strife. Once a prosperous, peaceful nation, its government had become ineffective in controlling the militias that warred on each other. 16 months ago, we were watching on our TV screens the shelling and bombing of Beirut, which was being used as a fortress by PLO bands. Hundreds and hundreds of civilians were being killed and wounded in the daily battles. Syria, which makes no secret of its claim that Lebanon should be a part of a greater Syria, was occupying a large part of Lebanon. Today, Syria has become a home for 7,000 Soviet advisors and technicians who man a massive amount of Soviet weaponry, including SS-21 ground-to-ground missiles capable of reaching vital areas of Israel. A little over a year ago, hoping to build on the Camp David Accords, which had led to peace between Israel and Egypt, I proposed a peace plan for the Middle East to end the wars between the Arab states and Israel. It was based on UN resolutions 242 and 338 and called for a fair and just solution to the Palestinian problem, as well as a fair and just settlement of issues between the Arab states and Israel. Before the necessary negotiations could begin, it was essential to get all foreign forces out of Lebanon and to end the fighting there. So, why are we there? Well, the answer is straightforward: to help bring peace to Lebanon and stability to the vital Middle East. To that end, the multinational force was created to help stabilize the situation in Lebanon until a government could be established and a Lebanese army mobilized to restore Lebanese sovereignty over its own soil as the foreign forces withdrew. Israel agreed to withdraw, as did Syria, but Syria then reneged on its promise. Over 10,000 Palestinians who had been bringing ruin down in Beirut, however, did leave the country. As to that narrower question, what exactly is the operational mission of the Marines? The answer is to secure a piece of Beirut, to keep order in their sector, and to prevent the area from becoming a battlefield. Our Marines are not just sitting in an airport. Part of their task is to guard that airport. Because of their presence, the airport has remained operational. In addition, they patrol the surrounding area. This is their part, a limited but essential part, in the larger effort that I've described. If our Marines must be there, I'm asked, why can't we make them safer? Who committed this latest atrocity against them and why? Well, we'll do everything we can to ensure that our men are as safe as possible. We ordered the battleship New Jersey to join our naval forces offshore. Without even firing them, the threat of its 16-inch guns silenced those who once fired down on our Marines from the hills. And they're a good part of the reason we suddenly had a ceasefire. We're doing our best to make our forces less vulnerable to those who want to snipe at them or send in future suicide missions. To answer those who ask if we're serving any purpose in being there, let me answer a question with a question. Would the terrorists have launched their suicide attacks against the multinational force if it were not doing its job? The multinational force was attacked precisely because it is doing the job it was sent to do in Beirut. It is accomplishing its mission. Now then, where do we go from here?
How would you handle this situation? The president posed the question to the American people from the Oval Office.
Let me ask those who say we should get out of Lebanon. If we were to leave Lebanon now, what message would that send to those who foment instability and terrorism? If America were to walk away from Lebanon, what chance would there be for a negotiated settlement producing a unified democratic Lebanon? If we turned our backs on Lebanon now, what would be the future of Israel? At stake is the fate of only the second Arab country to negotiate a major agreement with Israel. That's another accomplishment of this past year, the May 17th Accord signed by Lebanon and Israel. If terrorism and intimidation succeed, it'll be a devastating blow to the peace process and to Israel's search for genuine security. It won't just be Lebanon sentenced to a future of chaos. Can the United States, or the free world for that matter, stand by and see the Middle East incorporated into the Soviet bloc? What of Western Europe and Japan's dependence on Middle East oil for the energy to fuel their industries? The Middle East is, as I said, vital to our national security and economic well-being. Brave young men have been taken from us. Many others have been grievously wounded. Are we to tell them their sacrifice was wasted? They gave their lives in defense of our national security every bit as much as any man who ever died fighting in a war. We must not strip every ounce of meaning and purpose from their courageous sacrifice. We're a nation with global responsibilities. We're not somewhere else in the world protecting someone else's interests. We're there protecting our own. I will not ask you to pray for the dead, because they're safe in God's loving arms and beyond need of our prayers. I would like to ask you all, wherever you may be in this blessed land, to pray for these wounded young men and to pray for the bereaved families of those who gave their lives for our freedom. God bless you and God bless America.
The president did not stop here. He asked for a set of principles to guide America in the application of military force abroad and wrote about it in his memoirs. These then are the main principles, in his words, which he recommended for use by future American presidents. Number one, the United States should not commit its forces to military action overseas unless the cause is vital to our national interest. Number two, if the decision is made to commit our forces to combat abroad, it must be done with the clear intent and support needed to win. It should not be a halfway or tentative commitment, and there must be clearly defined and realistic objectives. Number three, before we commit our troops to combat, there must be reasonable assurance that the cause we are fighting for and the actions we take will have the support of the American people and Congress. Parentheses, we all felt that the Vietnam War had turned into such a tragedy because military action had been undertaken without sufficient assurances that the American people were behind it. Finally, number four, even after all these other tests are met, our troops should be committed to combat abroad only as a last resort when no other choice is available. We'll close with an excerpt from his remarks at Cherry Point Marine Corps Air Station upon the return of the casualties in Lebanon. Let's listen.
The motto of the United States Marine Corps, Semper Fidelis, always faithful. Well, the rest of us must remain always faithful to those ideals which so many have given their lives to protect. Our heritage of liberty must be preserved and passed on. Let no terrorist question our will, or no tyrant doubt our resolve. Americans have courage and determination, and we must not and will not be intimidated by anyone, anywhere. Since 1775, Marines, just like many of you, have shaped the resolve and strength of the United States. Your resolve, your role, is as important today as at any time in our history. Our hearts go out to the families of the brave men that we honor today. Let us close ranks with them in tribute to our fallen heroes, their loved ones, who gave more than can ever be repaid. They are now part of the soul of this great country, and will live as long as our liberty shines as a beacon of hope to all those who long for freedom and a better world. One of the men back in the early days of our nation, John Stuart Mill, said, "War is an ugly thing, but not the ugliest of things. The ugliest is that man who thinks nothing is worth fighting or dying for, and lets men better and braver than himself protect him." You are doing that for all of us.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit reaganfoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.